And it is about 3 minutes after nine. Recognize and welcome Co-Chair Green, Senator Stevens, Senator Bundy, Senator Olson, and Senator Hoffman. Good morning, everyone. Bright, sunny Tuesday morning in Juneau. We should be holding this on a fishing boat somewhere. So.
Some had their boat ready.
But absent that.
For some of us that have fished for a living, we'd rather not.
Absent that option.
It's not too long.
Absent that option, we're going to hold it right here in Senate Finance, where none of us would rather be than right here. So, today, we're going to start with fish and game and hopefully get to DEC. We're going to go, up to 11 today. Up to 11 today. And we'll start with fish and game, roll to DEC, and then tomorrow at 9 a.m., the university will be here in person to deliver their capital projects, and then finish up what we didn't do today, and then try to do DOTPUF. And if the gods be willing, we'll finish this process tomorrow. If not, we will finish it on Thursday morning starting at 9 a.m. So having said that, please, any visitors, turn off their cell phones and pagers. And on teleconference, we have Anchorage and Fairbanks. Anchorage and Wrangell are on this morning. Welcome to you on the teleconference network. We'll get to you as your area of interest comes up. Senator Green, anything to add before we begin? Anything else come before the committee before we begin consideration of Senate Bill 100? Seeing none, I did have one thing. Yesterday we had discussion about MPRA royalties, and Rhineland, if you would pass this out. And this was my fuzzy math yesterday, and I'd given it to Mr. Lawson from DCED, and he confirmed that this is the correct math, so I just wanted to pass this out to you folks. I have mine, so. So, if there's nothing else, let's begin with fish and game. Welcome, good morning. Identify yourself and your position, and please present fish and game capital budget requests.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kevin Brooks. I'm the Director of Administrative Services with the Department of Fish and Game. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about capital projects for the department. I was going to suggest that with the amount of research that this body does here in the Finance Committee, we could perhaps hold the Finance Committee meeting on our research vessel, the Medea, sometime, or be a perfect day for that.
Just let me know Thursday before 4, and Senator Green, I'm sure, would agree with that.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we have about 11 capital projects that we've submitted. We added a 12th that was by amendment, and I think you should have that in your packets.
And we do.
The first five, we have within our request of 12 projects, we have $1.8 million in GF, and that's included in our first five, and they're all for deferred maintenance types of projects. So I'll step through these and be happy to answer any questions for the committee. Our first project, reference number 30128, is for deferred maintenance on our facilities for $400,000 in GF. Mr. Chairman, this is an annual request. The department has facilities throughout the state in over 40 communities, ranging from bunkhouses, warehouses, laboratories, offices, field camps. We have a deferred maintenance list of over $4 million. This would address the most critical needs. We've included in the packet an alphabetical listing of the types of things that we would contemplate doing. And then, of course, we handle these projects urgent projects as they come up. As we try to repair facilities, we look to address life, health, safety code issues and try to restore and renovate our facilities to a good working condition that would last for up to 20 or more years into the future. So it's a basic deferred maintenance request. I'd be happy to answer any questions on that one.
Questions on deferred maintenance for facilities? Seeing none, next please.
Mr. Chairman, the second request, reference number 30129, begins deferred maintenance this time on our vessels and aircraft. We have five major research vessels in the department, as well as several aircraft. This is for our commercial fisheries division. The vessels and aircraft are used in managing and monitoring fisheries and as research platforms for gathering information on the fisheries. This would handle large maintenance projects on the vessels. Smaller, more routine maintenance is handled out of the operating budget.
Questions on vehicle and aircraft repair and maintenance? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at this $300,000, I guess one of the questions I have is, it's for obviously aircraft. I'm looking more specifically at aircraft repair and maintenance. How many aircraft do you have?
Senator Olson, the Comfish Division operates four aircraft, primarily out in Westward. And with our aircraft, that's out of the Kodiak and out of Dutch Harbor. With our aircraft, we use a mixture of commercial providers as well as our own. And it's a balance. I think we've done some research in past years that our charters of aircraft and vessels exceeds $2.5 million annually. So we complement what we charter with our own.
So you have contract, if I could, Mr. Chairman. You have contract pilots that are out there, or contract carriers that are out there, besides the four aircraft that you have.
Through the chair, that's correct, Senator Olson.
Okay. If I could,
please, go ahead.
As we look at these contract carriers or charter 135 operators, whether they are or not, I guess one of the questions is that has there been a change in some of the contracts that have gone on in the recent past?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, no changes that I know of. We maintain a charter list, and we make it available to anybody in the state, and it's sorted by location. So any aircraft charter, for instance, operation can get on that list if they maintain the appropriate permits for doing the type of work that we have.
Good, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, please.
It's my understanding that the requirements that go out for these contracts indeed have been changed in the recent past, so that there has been an increase in the number, in the requirements that have been mandated by some of the private carriers that are out there on contract to the fishing industry. Are you aware of that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I'm not aware of, if you have a specific incident I'd be happy to talk to you about.
Sure.
This.
In fact, one of the concerns that I have is that the requirements that are put out in the private sector have been above what a number of the pilots, as far as hours required in specific aircraft, has been above what the department has within its own employee of pilots that are there. Is that true or not true?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I don't have any personal knowledge of that, but I'd be happy to look into it.
Would you please?
Because there's a very limited number of people that we have out there that can fly our aircraft, so it'd be easy to track down for you.
Would you please?
Absolutely.
I'd like to. If I could, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Do you have the number of pilots that are employed for these four aircraft?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I don't have that with me. But again, it's easy to get that information.
Okay.
I can do that before the day is out.
One of the questions I do have, Mr. Chairman, if I could. Did you look at this aircraft in repair and maintenance? Are there any accidents within the recent past that have justified $300,000?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the primary purpose for this request for $300,000 is really more weighted towards the vessels than the aircraft. To answer your specific question regarding accidents, we haven't had any. And we're very fortunate that we haven't had in the recent past. We have incidents in our department where we have lost employees and aircraft. The nature of these requests is to keep our vessels and aircraft in good working conditions to avoid those types of accidents.
Okay. My last question, Mr. Chairman. As I looked at this particular thing, I noticed that you're overhauling engines. Is that indeed the case?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, that is one of the types of things that we would do. Again, I think this particular request contemplates more work on vessels than aircraft, but if an engine needed to be overhauled on an aircraft, that would certainly fit within the purpose of this request, and we would do that.
So you'd do the overhaul of the aircraft engine in-house? Maybe you're not the person to be asking this question, because to overhaul an aircraft engine, my experience is you've got to have a fair amount of equipment. You've got to have magnifluxing equipment, you've got to have all these manuals that are out there to make sure that things are within tolerances, to make sure that they can go to the next TBO. I guess I'm not...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I guess, again, this would be a balance of using commercial providers as well as our own staff. We do have mechanics. We have some facilities for doing repairs, but if they get beyond the scope of what we're able to do, then we would contract that out. And I know a lot of the, certainly, you know, I know your questions are dealing with our aircraft program, but on the vessel side of the shop, many of, or nearly all of those repairs are done. You know, we dry dock these vessels and we contract out for that work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bundy?
Chair, Senator Olson, you're familiar with Lakewood and the maintenance facility there?
Yes, I am.
I know they do fabric and sheet metal work there, but I don't know a lot of engine overhaul that takes place there.
When I've been there, Senator, I have not seen any, at least, repair station-type equipment, such as magnifluxing machines and whatever.
Other questions or comments on vehicle and aircraft repair? Senator Taylor?
Just one. Are you planning on purchasing any new equipment this year?
Both.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, we have nothing in this request would contemplate the purchase of a vessel. We have an appropriation on the books now for the replacement of one of our vessels in Comfish. That was a prior year appropriation.
Yeah, that's the $100,000 for the MVO Kishkush, how do you say it?
I was referring to Senator Taylor. I was referring to one of the larger manned vessels. We have a prior year appropriation to replace the. I have the same trouble you do with the name of that particular vessel referred to. But that's one of the unmanned ones, and it's a very old vessel.
Oh.
That,
okay, just one more. I know. Maybe you could tell us how the department purchased. A couple years ago, that gillnet boat out of Petersburg that you bought for a patrol boat down here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, I believe you're referring to the Kittiwake, the RV Kittiwake.
I'm not sure what you named it.
Is what it was renamed. We did a solicitation on that boat. We had two respondents, as I recall, both from down in your district, Senator, and we purchased one of the boats. I mean, there's a pretty extensive record on that. I know you've had some interest in that particular purchase, and I'd be happy to provide that for you. It has been a couple years since it's transpired, but it's pretty well documented what transpired with that particular purchase.
Yeah, well, for the committee's information, since you didn't go back into that, but that's fine. That vessel was purchased out of personnel funds. And when I inquired how in the world they could get away with that, they said because, and the director, our Fish and Game Commissioner wrote to me and informed me that because he didn't think that the legislature was going to give him any money for a boat, so they just took personnel funds to buy that boat. That's why I asked the question. You guys planning on buying any more boats?
Through the chair and Senator Taylor, that particular vessel was purchased with a combination of operating and capital funds. It's not uncommon for us to. You know, we come into the legislature and we requested funding for vessel replacement. In managing the commercial fisheries budget, it's a $45 million budget, and we do quarterly reviews. And as we got into the fourth quarter of that particular fiscal year, we did leverage some operating funds to go with the capital appropriation that we received through the legislature to purchase that boat. That's a correct statement.
I just want to make certain of this. You're not planning on, however you phrase it, leveraging personnel funds to purchase any more vessels that we're not going to know about till somebody makes a complaint and an inquiry. You're not going to do that anymore, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, I referenced leveraging operating budget funds. I don't know that they were personnel funds.
They were. I can show you the memo from your commissioner.
We get an operating budget to manage our programs. Again, if we had $100,000 out of a $45 million budget, that's a, as a percentage, that's a very small amount. And you know, I don't know if the specific dollars you're referring to went to rehab that vessel or do some maintenance on it or to actual purchase price, but we've gone in and we've come to this body in the past year, and as I stated, we have an appropriation on the books now for vessel replacement, and that's what we would intend to use it for.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess I find it almost disturbing that you're justifying the actions of a number of years ago that the Senator from Wrangell put up here, and I find it, I hope that's not the case that I'm seeing there, that the department decides how they're going to be using funds indiscriminately, and I find, as I made a speech on the Senate floor, I find it somewhat reprehensible that the department would not look at the legislative oversight and use the funds for which they were directed. I guess the further question I have is that are you planning on purchasing any new aircraft? Not necessarily under this particular request, 30128, but are there any plans to purchase any new equipment in the next fiscal year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, to answer your second question, no, there are no intentions or plans to purchase new aircraft. I'd also like to comment that there was no indiscriminate use of funds. We very much respect the authority of this body in appropriating funding for commercial fishing and all the other programs within our department, and I did not mean to give any impression that we indiscriminately spend those funds at all. We take very seriously the responsibility that we have.
Mr. Chairman, you could continue.
The funds provided.
With that in mind, then, I would like to have a description or some type of documentation that which funds were used to go ahead and purchase this vessel that the Senator from Wrangell talked about.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, we could certainly provide you with the memos and documentation that was, you know, it's part of the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Send it to you.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Taylor, if you'd give Senator Olson that memo, please.
Yeah, so you could
have that. I think that'll take care of that. And just so we can wrap up this part of the discussion. So, Kevin, am I understanding what you said? To your knowledge, there's no plans in the 04 budget to leverage operating funds to purchase capital equipment, and if there is, you'll come back to us and tell us.
That's correct, Senator, and outside of what's already, we have appropriate in our equipment 500 line in the operating budget already.
Okay. All right, other questions or comments on vehicle aircraft repair and maintenance? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. Just one, Mr. Chairman. In your description, you say that many of the vessels and aircraft are used by other departments and the Department of Public Safety. What percentage do you see that your vessels and aircrafts are utilized by other departments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, the primary purpose, obviously, during field season is that we have the vessels available to us, but there are, during the off season, for instance, NIMS has chartered our boats to do crab research and other types of research, so, and then we also work collaboratively with the Department of Public Safety. So I could provide for you charter days that we work back and forth with other departments and other agencies, but I don't have that information specifically. It's just a matter of trying to fill in the non-peak periods with other, you know, uses of those vessels for research and monitoring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions on vehicle and aircraft repair? See none, then let's move on to warehouse bunkhouse replacement. And before we do that, a couple of housekeeping items. Ms. Decker, we understand you're on the teleconference network from Wrangell, and you're going to testify on then the DEC's budget regarding GUI duct testing. So we know you're there, so stand by with us. Fairbanks, we understand, is having trouble getting online. Are they there yet? Okay, they can hear us, but we can't hear them, so we know that you're continuing to try. And with that, let's go to warehouse bunkhouse replacement.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I had next on the list dock repairs.
Pardon me, 6916. Pardon
6916
me. 6916.
Got ahead of ourselves. Dock repairs, maintenance, and replacement. This is a phased project. It's $300,000 in general funds. Again, this is a item where it's been a part of our deferred maintenance backlog, but when you get into dock repairs, the cost often exceeds what we could do with our basic deferred maintenance appropriations, so we've separated those out. The department has dock facilities in King Salmon, Cordova, and Petersburg. We're wrapping up completion of the rehab on the King Salmon dock, That's a facility that we use to manage the Bristol Bay fishery, and it's also shared with Fish and Wildlife Protection up there. So we're wrapping up that one, and then we're working on the Cordova dock, and then Petersburg would be our third priority. So we have, again, a phased project here to continue work and finish up deferred maintenance on these three docks.
Questions on dock repair? Seeing none, next, please.
Okay, the fourth project is 37932, a warehouse and bunkhouse replacement. Again, we've gone out, and these two sites are Cordova and Bethel, where we have facilities, warehouse and bunkhouse facilities that are very old and dilapidated. We have identified a $1.3 million in needs there, and we phased this project again at we're looking at $450,000 this year. In a lot of these locations, we have old mobile homes and ADCO trailers that we've used for bunkhouses, and as we've gone around the state, we're trying to replace those with commercial modular type units that are made for Alaska climate and, you know, will be a safe and dry climate for both our warehouses and then for bunkhouses for our employees that use these facilities during the field season. So this would start the work at primarily starting at Cordova, and that's a warehouse that we have there that we share with public safety. And that's a common theme that you'll hear with us as we come through. We try and work collaboratively with the agencies, in particular with Fish and Wildlife Protection, where we have joint missions in a certain area.
Senator Taylor?
Is this just seasonal housing? You said it says employee housing.
No, it's through the chair, Senator Taylor. It's seasonal housing. When we have, in the height of our field season, we might have a dozen or more employees, and right now we have, in Cordova, for instance, we have two ADCO trailers next to each other, and we've built a structure between them to connect them, and it's just basically a bunkhouse, literally, for our crews to sleep in during the summer.
That's what I meant. This isn't a year-round housing facility, either in Cordova or in Bethel?
That's correct.
Thank you. Other questions on warehouse bunkhouse replacement? Seeing none, next, please, Kevin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next project, 37808, is the last of our GF projects. It's $350,000 for a Kenai River sonar site, bunkhouse, and lab. The department has a sonar site at the River Mile 19 on the Kenai. We currently have a 1,200 square foot mobile home there. It's 30 years old and falling apart. And what we'd like to do is replace that with a facility that we could use to provide bunkhouse space for our crews in the summer, as well as some storage space for our sonar equipment, and then a small laboratory area where we could use to analyze the sonar data. It's not a wet lab in the respect of what we have in some of our other facilities, but just a place where the data coming in off these sonar units can be analyzed and used in management of the fishery. So, again, we're looking to replace this 30-year-old mobile home with a more secure facility for a very critical piece of our operating program.
Senator Bundy.
Mr. Chairman, just wondering on this one and the previous bunkhouses, how do you mothball or maintain them in the off-season when people aren't staying there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bundy, thank you for that question. We typically set these up so that they're basically a turnkey operation. We winterize them in the fall. Now, in many of our locations, we do have year-round staff, sort of like out at King Salmon, but we don't have people using the bunkhouses. So we'll have people on site that can, monitor the facilities. But we basically drain the pipes, and they're Alaska pack units, so they're well insulated and made to withstand the Alaska climate that we have.
Thank you.
Kevin, this facility would house how many people?
Again, it's not necessarily housing them, but just during the summer months, we have Oh, I don't have the number of staff out of that site.
It shows, it says two bedrooms, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, and so within those bedrooms, we probably have two bunks in each, so, you know, it'd be up to eight people could sleep there on a temporary basis.
So four to eight?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, other questions on Kenai River Sonar? Senator Taylor?
Yeah, on both the bunkhouses on the previous page, and Kenai River bunkhouse and sonar storage facility, it looks like the department's been getting by with trailers, basically, or ATCOs that were rolled in there, very inexpensive, and they were providing, in this instance, 1,200 square feet in a mobile facility. We're now going to double the size of the square footage, but we're going to spend $350,000 to do it. On the other facilities, $650,000, $350,000, and again, $350,000. I guess it's nice if we got the money. Maybe somebody ought to be looking at some newer ATCO trailers. Or maybe a quarter of the cost.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, what we've tried to do is go. We're recognizing that these facilities are really inadequate. When we put this mobile in there in 1970, we did not have near the high-tech sonar equipment, an expensive investment that the state has in use at that time that we currently do. We've also gone in and we've been successfully putting these light commercial modular units in. We've done it in King Salmon. We've done one in Delta Junction. It's an Arctic pack so that they're well insulated. They protect our investment. It's good, safe, dry housing for employees or use for warehouse or office. So we've tried to find a good, effective unit that's going to serve us long in the future, certainly better than some of these ATCO units in mobile homes have done. And a lot of the cost of that is mobilizing them and getting them staged out into remote locations. So it's, you know, it is a cost, but I think it's an investment into our management of these fisheries that will last for years to come, and certainly much better than what they're replacing.
I don't disagree. I'm sure it's nice gear.
Other questions on Kenai River Sonar? For the record, Fairbanks now is online and is listening and has no one to testify, but they are there for information. Senator Taylor?
I don't get up there all that often on the Kenai, but I have had in the last couple of years occasion to spend some time there. That sonar program itself, I hope whoever's sitting on the subcommittee for fish and game will inquire as to how effective it's been and what type of data it's delivering, and whether or not that, because I know they've had problems with it over the years. I'm assuming they've improved it. I'm assuming we have better technology now than we had before. But the species, the differentials between species on the count has always been, I think, a problem. The size of a fish going through, and whether it's a sockeye or whether it's a king salmon and so on. And I hope somebody will at least look into that program to see whether or not it's as effective as it could be, and whether or not it's generating the kind of information that is really, really accurate information. It's been, and I know it's been criticized in the past. Just a note for the committee members.
I think, Senator, who's the chair of the subcommittee? Senator Stevens? Yeah, so.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor is absolutely correct. On some of the older technology, there were difficulties in differentiating species, and I think the newer technology is much improved in that regard.
All right, anything else on Kenai River sonar? Okay, moving on to waterfowl conservation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Reference number 35896 is 256,700 fish and game funds for the waterfowl conservation and enhancement program. Mr. Chairman, this is a funding that has been derived through the sale of waterfowl prints. Historically, the stamps, waterfowl stamps, have been deposited into the general fund. but the prints have not. And so we've had two previous appropriations under this program, one in FY87, one in FY94, totaling $1,270,000. This would represent 256.7 is the revenue that's been collected under this program that has not been appropriated. And we would be proposing companion language in the operating bill that would make a deposit of that revenue from the general fund to the Fish and Game Fund. Now, in Title 1605, when this waterfowl program was created, there was language in the statute that made a connection with the revenue from the program being used for the waterfowl program. So this is this capital project reflects that legislative intent that was put in statute when it passed.
Question, Senator Bundy.
Comment question, as Doc Hunter and someone was involved in the creation of this legislation, appreciate past efforts. However, there have been in the more recent past some marketing problems or less than enthusiastic marketing. Are there plans to gin up the process a little more so that we can generate both more prints for the public's enjoyment and revenues for the process?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bundy, this is a program that has run into some challenges. It started out as a very popular program. After 15 years, we've gone from revenues in the six figures to, you know, maybe $5,000 a year, and it's really turned into a collector's kind of a situation where people aren't as inclined to buy waterfowl prints unless they've got a set going. And so we only have one vendor nationwide that's even willing to take on the program. So it really is something that has had some challenges. It doesn't generate near the revenue it used to. And in its inception, it's about $1.5 million since FY87. So in 15 years, it's about $1.5 million. But most of that revenue occurred in the first several years of the program. So I don't know what the answer to that is. People's art tastes are their own, but I think there will always be a niche market there for the collector.
Senator Bundy.
Was there in the past, or is it possible that the artists be their own vendor, and it was perhaps in the past artists who were better artists than they were business people, but is there some fruitful area to explore there so that we could encourage more marketing?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bundy, I'd have to talk to Tom Rolte, who's our waterfowl coordinator, and kind of get the details of what recent activities have been. We're certainly interested in maintaining it and growing it. It just, marketing is not something that we as the department have done, and we've relied on contractors to do that, but maybe there is something where we could pursue with the artists themselves. But trying to get national exposure for this type of thing, and then many of the other 50 states have them as well, so there's only so much you can do before you kind of saturate that market. But we'd certainly be happy to look into that and get back to the senator.
Maybe Mr. Nolte can give me a call sometime.
Sure.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at this program, Mr. Brooks, I guess one of the questions that I do have, do you ever envision that in the future, because of economic and financial reasons, this program will be discontinued?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I think we will maintain an art program because we do that for the stamps. Now, it will have to maintain itself. It's not something that we would subsidize with anything other than the revenue generated, so it does need to be self-supporting. But we do have an art program because the stamps depict waterfowl, and there's an artist chosen every year to do that. So I don't think the program will go away, but I think it will be, absent some significant change, it's going to remain kind of the scale back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Senator Taylor.
Yeah. Can you tell me what specific land acquisition projects you're currently contemplating?
Yeah. mentions it about three times in the backup. Does he, land acquisition, habitat improvement, and so on?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, I would have to get back to you on specifics. They're generally very small estuary-type parcels that are prime waterfowl habitat, not areas that would typically be used for any kind of development purposes. We certainly have a keen interest in that area, but I know we've done work out at the Palmer Hay Flats to enhance habitat out there, areas like that where we already have critical habitat areas established in statute.
Do any of these funds go into projects to enhance access or other things, or is this just acquiring lands and then locking them up?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, we have an access program that it's a separate program within wildlife. This money goes for habitat enhancement. There are some small parcel purchases, but it's not the primary purpose of this. The waterfowl program encompasses many other things other than just what is described in this capital request.
I just wondered how you enhance habitat. Do you actually go and physically do something with the habitat itself, or do you just put a fence around it and say this is now habitat?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, there actually are enhancement techniques. They may include controlled burns where we, where they go in and section off areas and have, burn away areas. Disking, there are other techniques that they use for enhancing habitat to create browse for different bird species and waterfowl. So I know Senator Bundy is very...
Senator Bundy?
It's important to point out that these areas are then open and encourage duck hunting. They aren't preserves that would prevent hunter access. But I know in Palmer Hay Flats, there's trail access that these monies have been used for. ATVs make a mud hole and it prevents access, so they've come up with other matting material so that they improve access.
Other questions on waterfowl conservation? Seeing none, moving on to... pardon me, Senator Hoffman.
Do you know what the costs, average cost per acre is for the acquisition of these properties?
Mr. Chairman, I know there's some reference to that within the detail here.
$41 an acre, that seems pretty low.
I'm sorry?
$41 an acre?
That was one reference to that related to the Palmer Hay Flats, but it certainly would vary with the different parcels that were... that would have been purchased. But again, I wanted to point out too, and I think Senator Bundy made a key point, this is not buying land to set it aside. It's really buying it so that it creates areas where duck hunters can go out and use, we're providing access and opportunity for duck hunters to go out.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would request information on parcels of land and average costs for the last, say, 3 years. Take a look at that.
Other questions on waterfowl conservation? Before we move on, just at ease in place, just for 1 minute. Let's move on to sport fish access projects, boating projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, that's reference number 30432. It's $2.6 million, of which $1,950,000 is federal, $650,000 is 25% matching that we use out of the Fish and Game Fund. Our annual federal aid appropriation for sport fish requires that 15% of that go into access projects, and this is an annual request that we come to the legislature for. It's one I'm sure many or most of you should be familiar with. Again, this is providing access to fishing sites throughout the state using federal aid and Fish and Game funds.
Questions? Senator Taylor?
Where? What specific projects are you going to build this year?
Mr. Chairman, we certainly could provide a list to the committee of the anticipated projects that we're looking at. They do change as we get up. Sometimes they do change, but it's a general list that is probably 90% or better of what we anticipate happening, so.
If you would, Kevin, get that for us, please.
We'd just like a list of what specific places, at least this year, you're going to build. Boat ramp here or a boat ramp there, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Thank you.
We'll provide that to the committee.
And so I understand the fish and game line there is money derived from fish and game licenses?
That's correct. From, actually, specifically fishing licenses.
Fishing licenses.
We do account for those separately, so we use the fishing license revenue to match the federal aid dollars.
Okay.
Correct.
Other questions on boating access projects? Seeing none, next, please.
Mr. Chairman, the next project, similar to the last one, 35714, is a transient boat moorage facilities. It's for $500,000 in federal funds. This program is one that's related to the first, but it's geared towards providing transit moorage for vessels up or 26 feet and over, basically considered non-trailerable. And what we try to do is provide rest stops along the waterway, similar to what you'd find on the highway. And there, we try to space them a day's journey away, and it gives boaters safe harbor as they travel, say, up through the Inside Passage. I know we've had several of these go up in the Ketchikan area and throughout southeast and as well as up north. But it's geared to provide similar amenities for boaters that you would find along highways.
And Kevin, the same question, if you could give us, I'd like to know where the '03 appropriations have been or are planning on being spent, and then also where the '04 appropriation would be spent.
I'll provide that for the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions, Senator Taylor?
I'd certainly hope that the department is working with our Department of Parks, because I know we have, I believe we have 17 state-designated marine parks just in southeast Alaska. There's not a buoy or a float in any of those parks that I'm aware of to tie a boat up to, nor do we have a restroom, I mean, an outhouse or even a picnic table in any one of those 17 parks. It would seem that if we're going to be building transient floats in remote areas, that we at least ought to be working with our parks to provide boaters access to these areas that we as a state have locked up for no other purpose than to call them a park. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, we absolutely work hand in hand with DNR and their parks on both the on-land access sites as well as the transit.
Maybe you could let me know what the plans are between yourself and the parks system, where you're planning to put any one of these floats in any one of our 17 marine parks in southeast Alaska. I'd consider that great, by the way, if you'd do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll provide that information.
And Kevin, do we expect that this type of funding will continue to come from the federal government, from the Wallet Borough program?
Mr. Chairman, this particular, the access projects is an annual thing because there's a 15% set aside. The transient boat moorage is one that comes every couple of years. And so we've received funding in the past in FY99 and also in 2003, but it's not a consistent every year. But I think it could reasonably be expected that we'll see these every few years or so.
All right. Other questions on the transient boat moorage? Seeing none, next, please.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the next project is 35794. It's equipment for wildlife conservation programs statewide using fish and game funds, $100,000. And this is standard equipment replacement that we use in our management programs. It could range from ATVs or snowmobiles. Sometimes we've in the past we've bought a boat, a skiff, and a motor for our waterfowl program. We've used it on computers that have been used again in management of the resources. So it's putting in the capital budget, just a planned equipment replacement.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a rather interesting discussion of land mobile radio yesterday. Would the Department of Fish and Game plan to be part of that land mobile radio, and
have they thought about what it would cost to buy into that network?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bundy, we've been involved in those discussions with the Department of Administration and Military Affairs as they've moved forward. We would be a much smaller player, but certainly could take advantage of that as it rolls out. I know some of our areas have utilized satellite phones, but the land mobile radios is certainly an area that we would, we're kind of waiting for that to get established, but it is something that we would view as a positive opportunity for us in the future.
Okay. Senator Bundy?
Dan, that would be, I'd encourage you to look into what that's going to cost and perhaps when it's appropriate, give us an appraisal of what it would cost to buy in.
Senator Taylor.
Just for Senator Olson's benefit, I note that we're also going to be replacing out of this fund, again, aircraft engines, and we also have aviation safety helmets. Is that normal equipment? I've never seen one of our officers wearing an aviation safety helmet, but is that something new or?
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Senator Olson.
Thank you very much for that question. If I could, Mr. Brooks, I have been on contract and done some of the flying, and it has, it's one of the things I do agree with is that they have headsets and equipment that has been kept in very good shape, and so I agree with that aspect there in the second to the last line. I'd also highlighted that, and I totally agree with the department having that equipment available for their staff.
Okay. Other questions?
Just asking again about the duplication. I know we had aircraft engines back here about four pages ago. We only have four aircraft, apparently. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor,
why is it in two places?
That earlier request was a Comfish general fund request, and this is in wildlife. And so we have wildlife. The commercial fisheries has four aircraft out in Westward Alaska. Wildlife has a couple of its own aircraft. I think one is in Nome and one in Fairbanks. I'd have to confirm those sites, but again, we use aircraft both on the game side as well as monitoring commercial fisheries.
Senator Olson.
Last comment I could make. I know that when I've done the work with them, that even though they do have only four aircraft, when they come to use my aircraft, they come with their own headset, which makes it a lot nicer because it then intermeshed within their own system, plugs into our intercom system, and I would say justified in this particular case.
I don't have any problem with that. I think it's probably a good idea. We probably ought to all be wearing them in airplanes anymore, I guess. But
I'm not sure that's the case.
Comfish has four aircraft. Wildlife Division has two.
That's my understanding. I would need to confirm that number. But I believe there are once in Fairbanks, once out in the Nome area.
And
all right, other
just wondering, I'm just trying to find out how many aircraft we have. I think we got about 46 sitting in public safety, and we've got a couple that were, what is that, Department of Natural Resources, those airplanes that do the lead-in for the bombers. I'm just trying to figure out how many aircraft we, the people of Alaska, own and are maintaining right now. So,
Mr. Chairman, I can certainly provide that information for Fish and Game. And again, with ours, it's a balance between using commercial providers and our own, and often when we need them at the height of the season, or either hunting or fishing, the commercial providers are taxing hunters out, and you know there's a capacity concern that goes on there. But we do use both, and we charter out over $2 million a year on both the vessels and aircraft, in addition to what we use out of our own fleet. So
Senator Olson.
Certainly, along that same line, I want to make sure that the comment that he makes is taken in the context that if there is a saturation that happens when the season is going on, but you can't, we as a state and then hope as a department and as a finance committee cannot afford to have aircraft that are used only a couple weeks during the year and then sit for the rest of the year, slowly eroding, corroding, and requiring more and more maintenance. And that's the comment that I make, that the more contract carriers that they do use, certainly justifies it from a financial standpoint from the analysis that I have done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, anything else on wildlife conservation programs? Senator Taylor, did you make a specific request as to, in regard to aircraft?
Just to aircraft, I just want to know how many.
Your request is?
How many, what the type may be, and just so we can keep a running tab here of how many airplanes and helicopters we own.
Kevin from Fish and Game, would you please get that? And my staff will get the other agencies to give us whatever aircraft, fixed wing and rotary that we have, both ownership and under contract. Okay, is that what you would like? Is that?
And I think Senator Olson had asked the question, is there a difference now in the contracts that we're putting out for leasing aircraft? And it's been my understanding from concerns out of my district that we just, the department just significantly increased the amount of hours, commercial hours, that they're requiring of a pilot before they're going to enter into fish spotting or patrolling or whatever contracts they're doing with those pilots. Some of these pilots have flown with them for years, and now, you know,
we'd like
to have that.
We've touched on that already, and you're going to get back to us on that.
Right.
Okay. Senator Olson, we want to wrap this up.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I certainly would like to have that the information to my office, but the complaints or the comments that I have heard from my district is also along the same lines as Senator Taylor, but also has come from the insurance aspect, where in the past, obviously our state law says that you have to have $150,000 a seat, and that on what appears to be an arbitrary basis has gone up within the department that they are now requiring $300,000 a seat. Are you aware of that? Is that true or not true?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I've only heard I've been on the periphery of that, and I heard about a change, but it wasn't something that we initiated, and I need to check on the details of that, because we're only putting out, to my knowledge, what we're required to by federal law or state law, so I'd like to confirm that and get back to you on it. But your understanding, if I want to understand you correctly, it went from 150 to 300.
Which is an odd number, because under the 401 certificates, you need $500,000 a seat. And so for an insurance carrier to come in with a number that's arbitrarily in between, I guess it's cumbersome.
I'll track that down and get it back to Senator Olson and the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's move on to Nearshore Marine Research Studies.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Actually, the next two of these are federally funded projects. The first, 38484, is the Nearshore Marine Research for $998,000 of federal funds. It's money that we've gotten over the last several years from Senator Stevens in Washington to develop nearshore commercial fisheries that foster economic development in our coastal communities. And we try to target small boat fisheries that can, again, enhance the development of some of our coastal communities. Some of the species that have been targeted in the past include sea urchins, sea cucumbers, gooey ducks, razor clams, rockfish. It's an ongoing federally funded program.
Questions on nearshore marine research? Mine would be, we've spent $4 million in the last 2 years. Have we done any good? How do we measure our results?
I think we have, Mr. Chairman, and we've worked with the subcommittee on the operating side, because this is it's really more of an operating project, but they come down with a three-year horizon, so we've included these in the capital budget, but it really is measured in the number and types of fisheries that we can develop that provide economic opportunity for fishermen.
And we expect this federal money to continue?
It appears to be. This is the fifth year, so it looks like it's going to continue for a foreseeable future.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to report from the department on what activities have taken place in the Aleutian, along the Aleutian chain, Aleutian Islands, and north of that.
Other questions on the nearshore marine research? Moving on to Bering Sea Crab Research.
I know you moved on.
Pardon me. Let's come back to which?
Nearshore research.
We're back to nearshore marine.
I've been very concerned about the stock assessments that we have conducted through the department. Is is, and I would like to recommend at least to the subcommittee that we seriously take a look at contracting those stock assessments out to real divers that really know what they're looking at. And sad part of this one is that personnel have used this one for the purpose of by having their own custom-made dry suits, becoming certified as divers at the local swimming pool. Then they take the Medea out, the most expensive boat we've got, and they go out and pretend that they know what they're doing, looking for sea urchins and gooey ducks and other things. I'm told it takes a diver a significant amount of time and experience, a professional diver, before he even knows what he's looking at on sea urchins. But we have spent a fortune on this stuff. Fortunately, we have got a little bit of expansion of the grounds. Unfortunately, we should have had four or five times that amount of expansion, and it could have been done by people that really knew what they were looking at. Now, maybe our personnel are finally becoming somewhat trained over the years. When I reviewed this program, all I found was very disappointing work that was going on. The fastest growing fishery we have in the state of Alaska are our dive fisheries. And the only thing that has impeded these dive fisheries has been this department and the manner in which this department does these stock assessments. And I'd really encourage the subcommittee to encourage the department to utilize these funds and subcontract out to real divers the actual work, or subcontract it out to the University of Alaska and their marine science program. Because then at least you're going to get a definitive result. You're going to have a time within which your result is to be accomplished, and that is measurable and accountable. Right now, it's just an ongoing program. And I can tell you on sablefish and the stickleback fisheries, we opened up that fishery and just about destroyed that resource before anybody in the department figured out that some of these fish are very old fish. Big red snappers can be 80 years old. And by the time the department figured out that many of these fish take a long time to reproduce, we'd pretty well decimated all of the stocks in southeast Alaska. And so as a consequence, I really believe that we need to review that assessment program, maybe make it a program that's more accountable, and at least give yourself the benefit of reviewing at least the cost-benefit analysis of using private contractors or university personnel for that purpose.
Okay. Senator Taylor, I think maybe a couple hours with the new Commissioner of Fish and Game would be well put, time well spent.
Mr. Chairman, I have one. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd echo that, and certainly Doug Meekham as well. I mean, we do use commercial divers on these developing fisheries, and I think it would be appropriate for Doug Meekham to sit down with the senator. Sounds like he has some concerns there, and we'd like to provide some information on that program.
Do that. Okay, let's move on here because I want to wrap up Fish and Game. Grand City Crab Research.
Mr. Chairman, this is the second of two federal requests in the Comfish Division. It's $1 million in federal funds. I'm sorry, it's reference number 38485. And this is, we have gotten funding. This is the second year of funding that we've received from the federal government. It's to support research on King and Tanner crab stocks in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands. The crab fisheries of the Bering Sea are ones that we manage under delegation and in coordination with the federal government, and this provides funding to help us accomplish that.
Okay. Question? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Brooks, if I could, what's being, with this Bering Sea crab research, what's being done up in the Norton Sound area for their crab industry that's there?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, that would be a question I'd have to refer to Doug Meekham, our director of Comfish, but we can certainly...
Is he online?
He's not online. He's up at the Board of Fish.
Okay.
Board of Fish is meeting in Anchorage this week, so he was not able to be at the hearing today.
My understanding, Mr. Chairman, that nothing is being done up there, and because of that, there are fairly conservative limits that are being put on the crab industry, and that's what has been the comment from the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation.
So, Kevin, did you get Senator Olson's question?
Yes, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Bundy?
I'd like to have a total of state and federal funds that have been spent the last 3 years to subsidize commercial fishing.
One at a time. Want to say that again?
Well, it looks like we're spending a great deal of money, some would call it, to develop the fisheries. I'd call it to subsidize commercial fisheries. I'd like to know what the total is.
We'll work with you on that, Senator Bundy. Senator Stevens?
I was going to address Senator Olson's comments.
Okay.
I'm not going to go where Senator Bundy went. I don't know how $2.5 million subsidizes a $2 billion industry, but you can explain that to me later. Senator Olson, I just wanted to comment that there are several crab fisheries across the Bering Sea that don't have stock assessments done on an annual basis. The Norton Sound, Western Aleutians, Red Crab Fishery, Eastern Aleutians, Red Crab, Brown Crab Fisheries, they haven't had stock assessments done for a number of years because there hasn't been the money available to do it. It's my understanding that this money goes for the large fishery in the central Bering Sea for the red crab and tanner crab fisheries, but the coastal crab fisheries, I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's seven separate crab fisheries in the Bering Sea, and only two of them have an annual stock assessment, and that's been that way for many, many years. So they just take a ballpark figure that they do an in-season stock assessment, essentially what they do.
All right. Does that help, Senator Olson?
Yes, it does. Oh, it tells me that there's nothing being done in the Norton Sound area.
Or other areas.
Is confirming that?
That confirmed that, yeah. In-season assessment is what they do.
Okay. Anything else on crab research? And Kevin, your last one, which is an amendment that we received yesterday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's reference number 38528 for a laboratory remodel for our Wildlife Conservation Division. Uses $150,000 in fish and game funds. We have a need for lab space in our Anchorage regional office. We have a warehouse portion of that facility that could be remodeled that previously housed a necropsy lab for wildlife, and we want to. It has a fume hood, and we want to do some remodeling of the facility to accommodate the all of the lab functions that we have on the wildlife side, and we would deal with species such as bears, wolves, sea lions, and those types of things for clean lab space for doing wildlife assessments or wildlife conservation assessments.
Questions on laboratory remodel? Seeing none, any other questions of Mr. Brooks on the Department of Fish and Game capital requests for Senate Bill 100? Yeah. Senator Bundy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin, you had given us a handout earlier. I'm wondering if you're going to go over that at any time.
We can in just a moment. Anything else for Fish and Game?
Mr. Kevin? Chairman, I have one more item. I think you've heard from the Office of the Governor already. They had one request in for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund.
That's right.
Reference item 33647.
That's right. You were going to go over that with us, weren't you? And I don't think we have that in front of us, but why don't you give your presentation? This was the 30-some million dollars?
Mr. Chairman, actually Congress has been appropriating money for this is the fourth year. This particular request is $21,857,000. We've had, over the last 3 years, approximately $60 million has been appropriated.
Kevin, let me interrupt you for just a moment. I have that here. The rest of the committee doesn't have it, so I'm going to ask Darwin just to give us, so we can see this, because I think you folks want to understand this. So if we could just get this passed out to the committee, let's put you on hold for just a moment. Senator Bundy, you had an issue on a question on a different issue.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you distributed some information on distribution of Alaska's NPRA, National Petroleum Reserve royalties, and I see a lot of red ink here, and I was wondering if you were going to go over it.
This was my math yesterday, and the underlying discussion was, it surprised me that development in NPRA, subject to grants to municipalities, has the potential of having zero put into the permanent fund, or certainly zero into the general fund. So those that think that MPRA may be the benefit the general fund or the permanent fund development therein need to understand that it's subject to grants to municipalities first. So there's a couple of problems with that, and you'll see there that in this particular calculation, which that CSCD says is the correct calculation as their interpretation, you'll see that most Alaskans would think that 25% of Alaska's gross receipts, $33.6 million, would go to the permanent fund per Section 15 of our Constitution. It says all rents and royalties, 25% will be deposited in the permanent fund. Well, that's not the case when we get to MPRA, because you can see that we only deposit 25% of the net, which is the royalties minus grants to municipalities. So that's somewhat disturbing to me, because our Constitution is quite clear. The second part of that is that in this particular case for 04, you can see that zero will go to the general fund for MPRA. And this has arisen because of the significant amount of money, because we're starting to develop MPRA, which we all want to do. But I think the bottom line is that it doesn't benefit the permanent fund anywhere near what the other oil developments in our state, because of the claims of municipalities. And I only offer this as a problem that I think that this committee should be aware of, that our state statutes and our federal law have trumped our state constitution. And indeed today, we are spending the next generation's monies out of MPRA on ourselves, and not putting it aside as our Constitution says it should. So I just offer this as a problem, and I don't know what I'm going to do about it other than just highlight it. And I think we all should be concerned about the way that we have interpreted MPRA development, because it doesn't benefit the general fund nor the permanent fund anywhere to the degree that I think the people of Alaska think it does or should. So with that, that's my two bits.
Just a Senator question, Bundy. If I might, Mr. Chairman. I mean, conventional wisdom has it that the Constitution trumps all statute. Have you had a legal opinion as to whether
there's an existing legal opinion that says that in this particular case, because of federal law, that the deposit to the permanent fund is net receipts. I can't square that with the Constitution, so we'll have to take that up with a lawyer.
Makes one wonder why we'd want to promote additional development, certainly not at state expense.
It's very troubling for at least one senator. Senator Taylor?
It appears from your breakout, though, that we got, what, $42,000 going into public school trust, and you have $6 million, roughly $400,000 that's going to power cost equalization. Is that right?
It could go to PCE, or it could go to the general fund. That's up to the legislature.
Well, the public school trust, I think, predates the Constitution and
yes,
state.
It does.
So as a consequence, that is one of the few dedicated funds we have, and that would have to be, we could appropriate that, however, to education. And the PCE monies, I would think we could appropriate that wherever this legislature decided to appropriate it. But if I remember correctly, that was part of a commitment that was kind of made that NPR funds would be used as part of the funding mechanism for a continued PCE foundation or program. But I wasn't part of that decision at the time. So.
I don't want to get too far off track here with this issue, because I think it's an issue that this committee and others need to wrestle with. My only purpose for showing this is that the people of Alaska should understand that NPRA, at least in 04, the development of that, the deposits to the permanent fund don't comport with our Constitution, and nor does the public school trust fund, because of the words, as you see there, of net. And of net is the problem that we're wrestling with today. So that's why I wanted to bring it to the committee's attention, and just for us to chew on as we march towards the end of this session. So anything else on that? Thank you for your question, Senator Bundy. Let's come back to fish and game. And in the Department of Administration's budget, you'll remember that we had a ongoing appropriation from the federal government that we have questioned before. And this year, it's $21.8 million, and we had deferred that discussion to Fish and Game. And Kevin, thanks for bringing that up, because I had forgotten that. And in front of you, you have the request, so if you'd please present that to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, this is an appropriation made to the governor's office.
Governor's office, thank you.
The purpose of the, it's for Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. Purpose of the fund is articulated in the congressional record as for salmon habitat restoration, salmon stock enhancement, and salmon research, including the construction of salmon research and related facilities. So $115 million was appropriated for the four western states of Washington, Oregon, California, and Alaska. And so our share of that this year is $21,857,000. This is the fourth year of funding. Of that amount, there's congressional allocations or earmarks totaling $13.5 million for specific projects that are detailed or at least listed on your in the backup. As you stated, Mr. Chairman, this is ongoing. I know the current administration and former Senator Osterman in particular is taking a good hard look at this program, previous appropriations, and we've been working with him to make sure, you know, that we're proceeding in a fashion that's consistent with Governor Murkowski's goals and objectives. And so, you know, we do have criteria that this money comes with from the federal government, but you know, it's a program that is currently under review by the current administration.
Commissioner Osterman, yes. Question, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since this these dollars have to get appropriated by the legislature, what is the time frame for that submission for the legislature to consider the administration's request?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, if the money's been appropriated by Congress, this is the request before you would, if approved, would take effect on July 1st, and most of the projects contemplated are 3 to 5 year projects that would occur over that time frame.
So, follow up on this, Mr. Chairman. In the federal legislation, it delineates the $13.7 million and how that gets allocated. I guess you said that Alan Osterman is contemplating other what to use the additional funds for, it would seem as though we would be looking at those as the legislature and how those would get allocated. And I'm wondering, if that is not the case, then what process is going to be utilized to expend the $7 million?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, we currently have a MOU with the federal government, National Marine Fisheries Service, on the implementation of this program. Again, we have the overriding criteria for which the funding has to be spent on. And then in the past, we've had a stakeholders group and a science panel and a process for proposing and approving projects that has occurred on the previous 3 years' appropriations. But each of those 3 years have also had these congressional earmarks as well. So it's a mixture of projects coming up through the stakeholder process in the past, and then congressional earmarks that have occurred in the funding legislation.
Other questions? Senator Stevens, the committee might benefit by your comments on this program.
This is a program that, as Mr. Brooks stated, it was formerly there was congressional earmarks that came out. The money was appropriated to the four western states, and we get a proportion of that each year. And the money came with earmarks for a percentage of it, and then the remainder of it essentially remained at the governor's discretion in the governor's budget. The prior administration had what was called a stakeholder panel that would essentially review applications for grants, and it was sort of considered a sort of an onerous application process, and the money, some people's interpretation, was held up and not really put towards salmon enhancement projects. Now, I think that the current administration is reviewing a new process for distribution of these funds, which is, as Senator Hoffman said, about $7.5 million this year. It's anticipated that this program will continue for quite some time at the federal level, because it's, again, and it's also part of the Pacific Salmon Treaty with Canada, so there's a portion that goes to Canada as well. So I think the current administration with Senator Osterman are looking at ways to try to best utilize that money to help stock enhancement as well as the industry itself.
And can any of this $21.8 million help with the recommendations that came from the Salmon Task Force?
Well, we're in discussion with them on that as well. That's correct. We've been talking with Mr. Osterman about that, and essentially it's at the governor's discretion on how he wants to allocate that money. That's the way the agreement is in every state, not just in Alaska.
All right, Senator Taylor.
I appreciate that, but Senator Hoffman's question is still a very valid one. It may be in the governor's discretion to decide how he wants to spend it, but it's still up to this legislature and specifically this committee to appropriate that money. And if you appropriate as designated here the full $21 million with only $13.5 million of it designated, that leaves a rather large amount yet to be decided with no further oversight by the legislature. So it's just, it's a policy call if you want to write the check for that amount or you want to know what it's going to go for.
Well, there's, Senator Taylor, there's quite a bit of money that we're waiting to see what the plan is, and that's the $35 million for disaster money plus the 12.5 annual that comes to the Department of Labor for displaced workers, as well as the $5 million that comes for the Department of Commerce for community economic initiatives that are used to were designated to provide relief to communities from the Salmon disaster. So there's a lot of we're waiting to.
Okay, anything else on this? All right, thank you. Anything else on Fish and Game? See nothing. Thank you, Kevin, for your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's roll forward to DEC and ask those folks to join us.
I do.
Stand at ease just for one moment while we get organized. Meeting will come back to order, please. We're going to now review the Department of Environmental Conservation capital projects in SB 100, and we have a whole bunch of papers in front of us. But Ms. Decker has been on with us teleconference. I wonder if we could go to Mike, if you would do your presentation, then go to 37713. And we'll let her do her testimony so that she can do the rest of her life, because she's been holding on here for an hour and a half. So could we go to 37713 and jump ahead to that?
Certainly.
Let's all turn to that then. The fourth item in your packet. And if you'd introduce yourselves, please, folks, for the record, and then let's go to GUI duck testing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning to you and the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Maher. I'm the Director of Information and Administrative Services for the Department of Environmental Conservation. Today I have with me four other directors that will brief you on their individual projects, and then we have a very large index of projects towards the end that are loans and grant programs. If it pleases the body, we will just go directly to that project. And
okay. Go ahead, please.
Morning. Good morning. My name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the director for the Division of Environmental Health, and I have a bad cold. So if you have any problems hearing me, please let me know. We'll start off with your request, which is reference number 37713, which we refer to as the GUI Duck PSP testing capital appropriation. This appropriation amounts to $250,000 and would be used by the department to test for PSP paralytic shellfish poisoning, is what that stands for, in GUI duck harvest areas. We've had problems in the past We don't have enough data to know when PSP is particularly high or in areas where it may be higher, which have limited the amount of live sales that commercial harvesters have been able to do. Live sales increase costs, or not costs, but profits substantially for the industry. And our competitors are British Columbia and Washington State, who also are able to sell much more live sales than we are because of the large body of data they have to know when PSP is higher than when it's not. So working with the industry over the last couple years, we've put together a pre-harvest certification plan. And we kicked it off this last year with the help from SARDFA, which the person on the phone represents. And we would like to continue that process to collect that data so that we can get a grasp of paralytic shellfish poisoning in Alaska and the breadth of the problem that we have to deal with. So this funding would go towards sampling of those areas.
Thank you. Questions of Kristen? Ms. Decker, thank you for holding on. If you'd like to provide your testimony, please. And your name and whom you represent, and if you would, please.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
You're just fine. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. This is Julie Decker. I'm the Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association, or SARDFA. I have submitted some written testimony to the chairs yesterday, so I'll just go over a few points. We are in support of this PSP testing program, and we've been working with the Department of Environmental Conservation for over 2 years to get to where we are right now, and our main goal is to increase the live sales of Gooey Duck to increase the revenue that is made off of this fishery. We've made large progress toward that goal just in the last couple of years. Previous to this work with DEC, we had gotten less than 10% of the Gooey Duck quota each year sold live. Just this last year, we estimate from the processors that we've sold between 50 and 60% of the quota live. So we've made a big jump, and we definitely do not have a perfect system yet, but we're continuing to work with DEC. We're going to have a sit-down meeting with them in June in Ketchikan, and we believe we're making good progress. These funds will allow us to keep moving towards our main goal, and as we continue to develop the Gooey Duck fishery and open new areas, which part of that nearshore fisheries money you were talking about in the Fish and Game's budget is helping us do. So as we open our new areas, we're going to be able to hopefully continue to increase the percentage where it is sold live, and so we're looking at increased revenue to the southeast area. I want to also briefly touch on another line item, which is the Seafood and Food Safety Lab. Just quickly, we support that new lab, and we don't necessarily have any preconceptions about how or where it's built, but we do support it being in Anchorage because that is going to be beneficial to us as far as being more efficient. We have to hire float planes to go out and take water samples for us, for instance. Because the water sample has to make it from the water to the lab technician's hands within 30 hours. So it's a big issue to make it an efficient system. So those are the two issues that I want to touch on. I appreciate your time. And if there's any questions, I'm open to answer them.
Betcha. Thanks for hanging on. And any questions first on Gooey Duck testing? Or in Fairbanks, they're known as geoducks. Okay. And any questions? Oh, yes, Senator Taylor.
I wanted to thank Julie for the great support she's given on this project because I strongly support it and have for years. But what problems do you run into in trying to get your Gooey Ducks and your water samples up to Anchorage?
For the water samples, we have that 30-hour time limit. And so we have, you know, samples anywhere from out on West Gull Island, you know, west of Craig, that have to, you know, like I said, we have to hire a pilot to go out and take the water samples, bring them back to Ketchikan, put them on Gold Streak on Alaska Airlines, get it to Anchorage. Then we have to hire a freight forwarder to come into Anchorage, pick them up, and drive them to Palmer, and make sure all that happens within 30 hours for the water samples. Now, for the PSP samples, there's no time limit in that the samples don't go bad as long as you keep them cold. The actual Gooey Ducks. However, we have an issue for marketing the live product. what we're trying to do is get products potentially anywhere from the domestic United States market anywhere to China, the Chinese market, before the ducks, the gooey ducks actually die. And so we have a span of 2 to 4 days that can happen in, and once you pull them out of the ground. So we're working with a tight time limit there, and so getting the gooey ducks to the lab and getting lab results out as quickly as possible is really paramount in that marketing of the live product. It's very touchy. Not only is the product touchy, but the market is touchy in that they're trying to supply the market on a daily basis, 365 days a year, with a small amount every single day. And so the market needs to know if they have some product coming out of a certain area so they can clear their other markets from, say, British Columbia and Washington in order to allow their last product into it. So that's a short version of why the time is critical for testing.
The only reason I bring that up is it seems ridiculous to me that to sell a gooey duck out of southeast Alaska, you have to fly that gooey duck and the water that he was in after you've taken him out of the water now and hold the rest of your stock. You got to fly that gooey duck, 1,300 miles to get it to Anchorage and then drive it out to Palmer. Now, the new lab they're talking about will be built in Anchorage, so at least you'll get rid of the drive out to Palmer. But you're flying it 1,300 miles. So you can take the very same gooey duck and fly it 750 miles the opposite direction into Seattle. I mean, it is a system that has been very difficult to work with at best. And PSP, with this agency, this is not new rocket science here. They've had to test for PSP on our crab. They have to test for PSP on our sea urchins. They got to test for PSP on... They basically anything you're going to eat coming out of the water that's a crustacean and that's a bivalve that somehow generates and holds this material within it has to be tested. Yet where is all the testing being done? Palmer, Alaska. We might as well be shipping the darn stuff to Fairbanks, I mean, if we're going to be logical about it.
And Senator, your suggestion is?
Locate a lab. Let's put the lab in some close proximity to the resource that is being tested by that lab. I know everybody's all excited. We got to find some use for that horrible fish plant that's wrapped around Ada's neck. So we somehow have to stick this fish lab into Ada's fish plant in Anchorage. Personally, I want to see a lab near where the resource is being taken, and you will see this resource and this economy then bloom. As long as you have to ship it to Albuquerque, for crying out loud, nothing's going to work, and not very well. So I would like some consideration, at least. We're going to build a fish lab. Let's put it near where the fish is at.
And we're going to go to this fish lab here in just a moment. As soon as we let Ms. Decker complete her testimony. Anything else for Ms. Decker in regard to either gooey duck testing or the seafood lab? For Ms. Decker. Yeah. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Decker, if I could just ask, you made a comment that less than 10% of the quota has been harvested. How much of that is because of some of the area not being permitted for harvest? Is there any?
That was previous to this last season, that was 10% of the overall quota was harvested for live sales. So it passed the PSP test in order to be sold. I think what you're asking is how much is that due to the fact that it was like caught for PSP, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, if you can understand that question.
Right, yeah, no, I understand that. We're not really sure. There are some areas that seem, because of our hit and miss information, PSP information that's out there, it looks as if there are a couple of the 14 areas currently that are generally hot, but that, you know, they may add up to about 20% of the quota overall. Then the rest of the areas, we have hit and miss information that shows at times it is clean and at times it's hot. And so that's a part of this program, is to extend the testing over this year it was a 7-month period, to see if there's any trends in when areas are hot and when they're not. we're hoping that, you know, we'll be able to get a larger percentage, probably about 75% out live, each year. It looks like there will be some that will remain hot. But we're working towards that. Another issue and why only the 10% went out live is this issue. We didn't have any money to do the testing. And we also didn't have a program for doing this pre-certification, which is what affects the market. If you can pre-certify an area, you can get your market set up, and it works much more efficiently. So there's actually several layers of reasons why that 10% was so low. It's not just the high levels of PSP, but these other market conditions and the program that we've been working on with DEC.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson. Senator Bundy, for Ms. Decker.
Yes, thank you. What does the state charge you for this testing?
Through the chair, right now it's $125 per PSP test.
And then your transportation costs are on top of that.
That's correct.
Yeah, thank you.
Senator Stevens for Ms. Decker.
Thank you, Ms. Decker. You have the approximate volume in terms of poundage, what we harvested on gooey ducks last year?
This last year, I believe it was 280,000 pounds. In the past, it's been as high as 400,000 pounds. And like I said, we're continuing to develop and open new areas. And we're hoping to hit a sustainable range of around 500,000 pounds a year. And that's without some sort of enhancement project or program, which is a possibility for the future also.
And thank you. And can you give us a ballpark estimate of the difference in value between a live sale and a frozen sale?
Yes, it's anywhere from 5 to 10 times the difference in sales, in value, excuse me.
So what, so a $10 sale versus a $2 sale?
That's correct, or probably more like a $1 sale versus a $5 to $7 sale.
Per pound.
Per pound.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And where does a half a million pounds of gooey ducks go? What's the market?
It's mostly ultimately? An Asian market, and there is some domestic market, mostly in like Asian restaurants in the United States.
Oh, really? So most of it goes overseas, Asian to Asia?
Yes, that's correct.
It's very interesting. You learn something every day. Okay. And Senator Green reminded me there's a burgeoning gooey duck industry being farmed in Palmer. So we'll get to that later.
You're right close to those seed potatoes.
Yeah. Right next to the All right. Anything else for Ms. Decker? Thank you, ma'am, for sharing your knowledge with us this morning and hanging in there as we work through these capital budgets. All right, let's come back to the table, and let's start at the top of the list, seafood and food safety lab replacement. And we've got about 20 minutes.
Senator Chairman, this is reference number 37753.
And let me interrupt 1 second. Mr. Schaffel, we understand you're online in Anchorage for questions, so we know you're there. Interrupt if you have something to share with us. Go ahead, please. Thank you.
I'll start off by explaining just a little bit about what the Seafood and Food Safety Lab does, because I think it does a lot of things that maybe everyone isn't sure of all the things it does. It does certify commercial food industries to develop food products that's more than just shellfish.